Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Scott Krieger, the president and COO of SLS Las Vegas, the year-old property that was shaped from the former Sahara, on how it has been performing and what changes have been made since opening. Former Mirage and Station Casinos exec Scott Krieger was tapped in 2012 to take over the struggling Revel project in Atlantic City. Krieger's emphasis on the gaming product increased productivity and revenue at the property, but it was too little too late, as debt and monthly energy bills defeated his every effort. But his reputation as a turnaround artist was just beginning. In 2014, he was chosen to replace the departed Rob Osland as the leader of SLS Las Vegas, a rebuild of the former Sahara property that opened to high expectations but faltered early. The operator, SBE Entertainment, the trendy nightclub, hotel, restaurant operator, hadn't connected with Las Vegas as he had hoped, but Krieger got down to work. Again, with an emphasis on gaming, the local market, and the superior F&B products, Krieger is slowly turning the ship. He spoke with me at the SLS in May to explain his philosophy and describe why SLS will soon become profitable. Scott Krieger, thanks for joining us on the GGB podcast. Last time we did this, we were overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. Now we're in your nice offices here at SLS, so it's good to have you back.
Well, thank you very much, Roger. It's nice to be with you.
Let's talk about your experience here at SLS. You've been here, what, almost a year now?
Just about a year. Yeah, yeah, came in the fall.
So why were you brought in, and what did you find when you got here that you really needed to pay attention to?
Well, the property had just opened up. It was about 3 months into post-opening, and they're trying to get through, what the trials and tribulations of typical opening.
Right.
And, Rob Osland, who was the previous president, had decided to take another job and work on another project. And so I was just coming off of my project at Revel, where I spent a year and a half doing a strategic sale process and trying to kind of correct the business model at Revel. So it had a lot of similarities, lifestyle oriented property, trying to figure out the right business model to operate on and maximize profitability. And I'd met Sam Nasirian in the past, and so it was just coincidence that we had just kind of concluded the auction process at Revel. Sam gave me a call and said, "Hey, we're looking for somebody out here to take SLS through, post-opening and get it on the right track. Would you be interested?" So for me, to be back to Las Vegas, I'm a 25-year Las Vegas casino executive, to be back on the Strip, and to really be one of the new emerging developments that had taken place in a number of years, and kind of to be one of the first movers in the next era of Las Vegas Boulevard growth was super exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And not only to do that, but to be a first mover on the north side of the Strip, where there's just a ton of plans being developed and executed upon, but we're kind of the first mover for that. So it's super exciting for me to be part of this.
Great. So what control were you given over the operations when you came in at SLS? Obviously you have to answer to the major investors, but did SBE have a role at that time, since Sam was kind of had stepped back?
Yeah, you bet. When I first got here, Sam was very actively involved. And, Sam is an incredible brand builder.
Sure.
And not only just from a marketing standpoint, but from a quality of experience standpoint. So one of the first things that was amazing to me was to go to Beverly Hills and to eat in his restaurants and stay in his hotels and really realize that it wasn't just a marketing pitch, that it really had a lot of integrity, and that, there was a quality product behind the brand. Sam was very successful in putting those elements into SLS Las Vegas. So I, from the day I got here, Sam was, partnered with me. He knows, what he's good at. He knows what I was good at. And we worked really well together. He did step away, for a while and has had less impact on the property or less influence on the property, but still, you know, we stay in touch. And,
right.
You know, his infrastructure and brand is still, you know, very solidly in place at the property. Now, you know, I am fortunate enough to also have Stockbridge, who is the 90% owner of the property. And they are incredibly gracious in allowing me to be very entrepreneurial. And so they let me do what I need to do to turn the property around. So I love these entrepreneurial opportunities. So had the same thing with Revel. And so we've been able to do a lot of good work in a very short period of time because of that.
Okay, great. So a lot of the elements of this property, you know, are reproduced from previous SBE properties in L.A. or Miami or wherever, you know, the Sayers Club, Foxtail, a lot of the restaurants. Are you evaluating about these factors about whether they work here in Vegas? You know, sometimes they work in one city, don't work in another.
Yeah, we definitely are. Here's some of the things that I've kind of triangulated on. First of all, we're unique in that, unlike a lot of Las Vegas Strip casino hotels, we own all of our own brands on the property. So whether it's Bizarre Meat or Katsuya Cleo, the restaurants, the nightclubs, we run and operate those properties, or those assets ourselves. So that's kind of unheard of these days, where you have celebrity chefs and nightclub operators that work on lease rent deals. And so, you know, you have to kind of go in and say, what are your strengths and where you need to bolster yourself, especially when you're in a situation as a new property that's kind of gaining recognition and people are trying to figure you out and become familiar with the brand. I can tell you, just to go through some of the major categories, the hotel product, first of all, the remodel of the place has just been, is phenomenal. It's like a ground up build. It's not really a remodel. It's, they did a phenomenal job, and the property itself has great bones. The adjacencies are great. The feel in the casino is great. It's very manageable. And it's kind of unique. It's a little truly boutique for the size of most Las Vegas casinos. So you add to that what I think is the best restaurant compilation in Las Vegas. So starting with Bizarre Meat, which is our flagship Jose Andreas restaurant that just this week the Robb Report named it the best of the best restaurants. So Zagat has given it top accolades. The James Beard Foundation has given it top accolades. It's a must-do type of a restaurant.
I agree with that.
And then you go down and look at some of our other upscale restaurants like Cleo and Katsuya, our Mediterranean tapas and sushi restaurants, and they are on par with anything on the Strip. And then we have this great complement of casual dining offerings. So we're really proud of what we're doing there. Nightlife, we are in the nightlife business. You know, wholeheartedly, we have two full nightclub venues, a day club venue, and a live entertainment venue. Right now, what we're doing is, as you probably know, it's become very competitive in the marketplace with Hakkasan buying Light Group, and then the new opening of Omnia, and then the remodeling and expanding expansions of most of the nightclubs that already exist on the Strip. It's highly competitive. So what we're trying to do was, you know, we came out strong with a very strong complement of electronic music DJs. And so now what we're trying to do is broaden our kind of variety of music types that we run through the clubs, including live entertainment out of the pool. But we're seeing very, very good success at the property. We'll also take some of our big box, one of our big box nightclubs, and start to look at other opportunities to do stuff in there midweek. Again, to broaden our appeal. So whether it goes, runs the gamut of comedy to live entertainment to different forms of nightlife entertainment, you know, we're looking to draw, you know, cast a wider net and drive in a lot more people to the property through entertainment.
Okay. That's great. Now, you closed the buffet when you first came in here. Why'd you do that, and are there plans to open it again?
Yeah, I came in and, you know, first of all, you as an executive, you take a look at the financials. So there's a dual-edged process. There's growing revenue and creating brand, but there's also being financially responsible. So the original thought process behind the buffet was that it was going to be a locals driver because we have this tremendous amount of rooftops around the property and the Turnberry Towers and a lot of high-rise towers and a lot of older Las Vegas neighborhoods right in our backyard. So the thought process was good that we could also attract local customers. The execution was a little bit confused in that it was a $31 price point and we served very kind of upscale food. Right. So it wasn't positioned as a locals buffet.
Right.
Second thing it was challenging. It's placed in the middle of our convention center on the second level.
Right.
It probably would serve us better as convention space than it does buffet space. And so, you know, for us, it just at the time, we didn't have the database of casino customers that most casinos, when they open, enjoy. So you open another Caesars property or you open another MGM property, and along comes this large database to help feed that. But we didn't have that when we opened. And so, you know, buffets need that strong gaming database to drive them and create other profit potential for the buffets. And we just didn't have that when we opened. And so we're not ruling out opening the buffet at some point in the future. But from a financial standpoint, and it just didn't make sense at the time.
Okay. So if you do, you'll probably relocate it at any rate.
Yeah.
Your retail offering was always different here with the Fred Siegel stores. You know, those anybody not familiar with Los Angeles probably doesn't understand what it is, but you know, it's such an iconic brand in LA. Has that worked for you?
Yeah, yes, you're right. Fred Siegel, I remember doing another development before the economic downturn where we would have died to have Fred Siegel.
Right.
In our complex, because it is iconic and it is a really strong brand in LA. One of the things we struggle with there is a more broader recognition of that product, across, the people that come from all over the country or out of the country to the property. We're happy to have Fred Siegel as a retail partner here, along with Marshall Retail Group.
Right.
And so, we're working through product mix as you would with anything, what sells, what doesn't sell.
It's like a shopping center.
Yeah, what's the right price point. But the interesting thing is all of these kind of adjustments, if you would call them that, all have to be wrapped up into this careful consideration for brand essence. So the worst thing in the world for us would be that we lose our brand identity.
Right.
And we become kind of a neither nor. We're not as hip as we should be to be kind of categorized as this, affluent lifestyle, upper upscale experience. But at the same time, we've kind of dumbed it. We're so out of reach that the mass market doesn't understand where we're at. So you have to thread this gap between staying true to your brand and at the same time providing products that the customers that are coming in your property prefer.
Right.
So we're doing that through all of our major divisions. So retail is just one of those. We talked about nightlife and restaurants, just adapting those things. I think you can be completely on brand and true to this SBSLS brand promise. But at the same time, broaden what you do, because Las Vegas is a much more broad market than, say, Beverly Hills or South Beach in Miami. So, I think that you have to take that same wonderful brand essence and say, how does it work in Las Vegas? And it's very similar to what I did at Rebel, where you took a very singular focused lifestyle strategy in a market that, catered to 10 million people in a two-hour drive time that had varying demographic profiles and spend habits.
Right.
So what we did at Revel was very similar to what we're doing here, is how do you create an on-brand quality experience but broaden, what that is so that more people can enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Great. One thing we didn't talk about was the pool. The pool is the day club type of experience here is second to none, I think, on the Strip. How has that been going, and how are you going to encourage that to continue?
It's absolutely phenomenal. And, the day club experience in Las Vegas in general is phenomenal, mm-hmm. the velocity that it has. And right. how it, back in the day, when I worked on the Strip 20 years ago, the summer was the doldrums, and now it's, packed with club goers and mm-hmm. these day clubs. And so we're firmly in the pack. There's six, kind of full scale mm-hmm. committed day clubs in town, and we're one of those. We book not only we book entertainment, high end EDM entertainment mm-hmm. in there Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Mm-hmm. So it's a big program.
Yeah.
We also are laying over the top of that a 10 concert summer concert series. Mm-hmm. For nighttime.
Okay.
And it also integrates with Foxtail Nightclub. So right. when we roll up the garage door openings mm-hmm. and we integrate the nightclub with the pool club at night, we have this very high-tech laser show
yeah.
And screens that reflect off of our garage and mm-hmm. our towers to create kind of a nightclub experience right. in the outdoors. It's one of our key selling points of mm-hmm. the property. It helps us continue to accentuate the brand,
right.
and at the same time, we're driving just a tremendous amount of people through the property. They're really enjoying the experience.
Great, great. Let's talk about the casino. You mentioned the database problem in the beginning. Rebel had that same problem early on. Had no names in the database. You got to start building it from scratch. Where are you in that process right now?
Well, when I got here, we weren't where we needed to be.
Right.
And so I have a gaming background. I came right. up paying jackpots, mm-hmm. At Mirage
sure.
when it first opened up.
Right.
That was my original
right.
job, we went through the fundamentals. First of all, we took a look at the loyalty program. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, the loyalty program was similar to Revel in that it didn't have any tiers.
Right.
So there were, there was no aspirational tier levels or benefits mm-hmm. in that regard. We took a look at some of the processes of being able to use your points for food,
mm-hmm.
Which it currently, or it wasn't, that function wasn't mm-hmm. available. Funny you should say, ask this, because in June we're launching a completely new card program.
Okay.
So very competitive point to redemption ratio, mm-hmm. more competitive than the local casinos.
Mm-hmm.
So more competitive than Boyd, more competitive than Station, a better value.
Okay.
So, I want to make a big splash into the local market, because this property is surrounded by
right.
Neighborhoods, and it actually is a really easy property to get into and mm-hmm. out of. And to kind of use as a customer.
Right.
It's very friendly and convenient and easy. We've got very traditional locals database segmentation mm-hmm. strategies for free slot play and
right.
other things, point multipliers, drawings. So we've put in place a legitimate locals program,
mm-hmm.
and we've seen great success. So then there's the other aspect of casino marketing, which is player development.
Right.
So I had the fortune of working with some just incredible player development executives on the East Coast. So I called them up and I asked them if they'd like to come join me here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have two of the top, one of the top PD executives and one of the top casino ops executives
right.
on the East Coast came and joined me. Here and together we're paired with one of the gals that I think is one of the best local marketing people in Las Vegas.
Right.
We put together a heck of a team.
Mm-hmm.
So not only are we going after high net worth gaming customers through player development relationships, tournaments, baccarat mm-hmm. tournaments, but we also have stood up a very legitimate Asian player development team.
Okay.
So we have six Asian player development hosts, and we're starting to provide amenities on the property that an Asian customer prefers.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing tremendous growth in our Asian place. So we just put a new promo chip program in place. And so all of these engines are starting to fire.
Mm-hmm.
And that translates to database growth.
Sure, right.
But clearly we're in the infancy of building a database that would allow the property to compete on a win per unit basis, mm-hmm. you know, that's commensurate to the rest of the properties on the strip.
Right, okay. I've spoken with one of your East Coast guys you brought in, and he told me he always wanted him to come to Revel. He wouldn't do it, but when he came out here, he said the opportunity was too great to pass up.
Yeah, so we're fortunate to have
him. Yeah, great. When you talk about the locals market, I mean, people were always saying, well, it can't be local, it's on the strip, but, you know, you can compete with right down the road, Palace Station, that's almost strictly a locals market, and, the property here just is head and shoulders above that property. Is that the kind of market you're looking for right now?
Yeah, you bet. I think that there's a brand play to be had, but there's also kind of midweek and weekend, differences in your customer base. Mm-hmm. And I think you can make a property do different things at different times.
Absolutely.
So our strategy, for every bit of location challenge we have on a transient basis, we have a great opportunity in that we're right next to the convention center.
Mm-hmm.
So my ultimate structure for the property would be midweek, that we're a very friendly and convenient and value-oriented local gaming
mm-hmm.
property. And a top of mind convention hotel, whether to stay here, to come and eat here, to have a meeting here, just to grab cocktails mm-hmm. after a large convention. Midweek, I'd love to have that convention traffic here.
Yeah.
We see it. Mm-hmm. We just need to grow it.
Right.
And then on the weekends, I think we're a full blown lifestyle oriented property where people are, affluent young lifestyle oriented people are clubbing and mm-hmm. dining and relaxing at the pool and, enjoying kind of the scene of Las Vegas.
So to a certain extent, you want to be what the Palms used to be in the old days, where during the day they had terrific local play, and at night the hip crowd came in, and on the weekends as well.
Yeah, and there's a couple other ones you can point to.
Right.
You can point to the Rio back in the day
mm-hmm.
when the Rio was off-strip, and there was a time when the Rio was just the preeminent
place
to stay.
Yep.
In Las Vegas. Now, I think the one thing that you have to be careful of with that is always deliver on the quality of the brand experience that you are trying to go after. So we want to do all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that, I remember eating in the restaurants that Tony Marnell created at the Rio, and,
mm-hmm.
he was always quality focused. And so he had that ability that you would go and experience the product, and it was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's exactly the model we're going after. It's a tried and true model.
Right.
We have the asset and we have the quality of experience that mm-hmm. I think we can deliver that.
Okay. Locals are notoriously picky, though. are you really paying attention to the kind of promotions you're developing, to really appeal to the upper scale, obviously, of that local market?
Yeah, so as you probably know, I was the CMO and CIO for Station Casinos, and I developed Red Rock and opened it and ran Green Valley. So I spent about 12 years in the locals market. So I know my way around, how to market to these folks, both promotion area and in the mailbox and from a, customer recognition standpoint. And like I said, I had hired a gal that worked with me at stations
mm-hmm.
To come help us here, and she's one of the best in the business.
Right.
So, we're putting the programs in place, doing the promotions. The nice thing about our property is instead of competing for a drawing where there's 30 to 40,000 people all trying to get the same prize across 18 casinos,
mm-hmm.
This is one casino with 650 slots, and your likelihood of actually winning something here is pretty good.
Right.
So if I were a local customer, given the fact that we're going to launch this new card program and it's going to have the most competitive point to dollar redemption
mm-hmm.
ratio in the locals market, plus the attainability of winning prizes and these types of things, this is where I'd play.
Okay. So I guess you also had to pay attention to the slot mix, since there's a lot of attention paid to that by the locals market, particularly the video poker machines and things of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I think we might have, when I got here, we might have gone a little bit too far. You know, we had a tremendous amount of video poker product, and it was very low hold video poker product. And, you know, we started to look at that when I got here, and then what prompted an acceleration on that was getting a report from Jeffrey Compton, or actually Bob Banzer, where he said it took him two articles to write how loose our slots were here, and so, you know, we certainly provide a good value to customers here, both in video poker and regular slots, you know, and something that's you know, a better value from a hold percentage standpoint than a typical strip pocket property.
About the monorail, did you think there was going to be a big impact from that, and have you been surprised by more or less visits that come off of there?
Depends on, you know, when it's being used. Mm-hmm. The monorail is certainly a benefit. It connects right to the back of our property. I like to say we're the first stop on the monorail.
There you go. Rather than the last. Like the beginning of the boardwalk rather than the end. Right?
Yeah, right. So in big events, when you have a lot of throughput, whether it's a citywide convention or these Rock and Rio events over at the City of Rock, you know, it sees tremendous ridership. But it's actually a pretty phenomenal. It's clean. It's convenient. It's well designed. It's inexpensive to use. You know, a person can come to the property, get a 3-day pass for a nominal amount of money. And go, you know, go up and down the strip at will. So, you know, we work very closely with Curtis Miles and the monorail folks. We have kind of a joint marketing effort, and we've spent a lot of time developing that relationship with them, and we're big supporters of the monorail.
Okay. Tell us how we just got through the first Rock in Rio, two weekends of solid music. What kind of impact did that have on the property?
That's the best free entertainment I've ever seen.
Really?
Our property, you know, was front and center.
Yeah, you were like the headquarters almost.
Yeah, it was like the stopping point. You know, it was just phenomenal. You know, you'd look across from, we did the, again, it was a collaborative effort.
Sure,
that's what's nice about being on the north side, you know, and all of this emerging business, we're all collaborating, whether it's the Stratosphere guys or, you know, the new guys, Scott Mankey and the Paragon Gaming guys that now just today announced that they're running Westgate. You know, we're all working together. Mm-hmm. And so Rock in Rio was one of those examples. We shot the fireworks from Rock in Rio every night. There were fireworks show. They were shot from the tower of SLS. So I couldn't ask for a better way to expose this property being less than a year old to the masses.
Right.
You know, who are we, where are we located, and what's inside? Because we literally had tens of thousands of people every day coming through the property on all 4 days. And so it was phenomenal. And, you know, the experience was phenomenal over there, well orchestrated. And, you know, the city did a great job with the traffic and kind of pedestrian and traffic flow. I was a little nervous that it was going to be congested, and it was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So the whole experience was great, and we're excited for MGM to make a commitment to you know, invest $20 million in that venue, and we're excited to continue to see them program it, you know, because, quite frankly, we benefit from it. And then the other thing that's exciting is the you know, while it's sad to see the Riviera go, at the same time, you know, that's what makes Las Vegas great. It's always reinventing itself. It's always growing and creating another reason for people to come. And so the expansion of the Las Vegas Convention Center up to the Strip, we're super excited about that happening. And then the groundbreaking of the Genting project, you know, is exciting for us as well. And so, you know, we're anxious for our neighbors to grow into the area. You know, we're optimistic that you know, in a short period of time. Because it's not just about, you can't just peg the opening day and say that's when it starts. You have to realize that the architects, the engineers, the city planners, the, you know, the commerce that comes from these endeavors starts very early, you know, as much as 2 years before. So they're all going to need a place to eat, a place to meet, a place to sleep. And so we're anxious for all of these big projects. I don't know if you saw there, they broke ground on this Lucky Dragon casino right next door, which is just great. You know, so we're starting to see that there was an original investment thesis in this property, and that was that we'll get in early. And be a first mover and watch it grow around us, and that's starting to happen.
It seems to happen. Yeah. Okay, great. So this property is owned by, you know, private companies, individuals. You know, it doesn't have all the reporting that, that a public company has. How are we going to know when this property is really performing at its top pace here?
Well, one, we do file with the SEC, so we do 10-Qs. K's and
right.
There is financial disclosure there. So I think maybe a different question you may be asking is when are we going to see, you know, financial success? And so, you know, I'm optimistic that it's every property has a ramp up period. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you chart, which we've done this, all the ramps of all of the properties that open across the country. Mm-hmm. You know, it's somewhere between a 12 and 24 month endeavor, you know. I would like to see it be less than 24 months for us. I'd like to see it, you know, be less than 18 months for us. Will it be? You know, we're just putting a lot of new programs in place, and we'll just have to see how quickly they adhere to, you know, growing the business model. So. I'm really optimistic that we've got the right team in place at the property, and we have all of the right business strategies in place, and those business strategies are beginning to be deployed. And so I'm optimistic that it's a, you know, it's somewhere in that 18 to 24 month ramp up.
Great. Well, I'd love to see that. You're getting a great reputation in the industry as a turnaround expert.
Well, I appreciate that.
But I don't know if you want anyone to keep that reputation.
No, it's great. It's entrepreneurial and it's fun. It's not for the faint of heart.
That's for sure. A lot of pressure.
You know, if you like instant gratification, sometimes you go home scratching your head.
Exactly.
But you have to, you know, you put the right people in place with the combined kind of vision for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you work through the business strategies collaboratively, and they make good sense. And quite frankly, you know, not trying to reinvent the wheel on every single thing you do is part of that strategy. Mm-hmm. And learning from what other people have done for a lot of years and have kind of run those rails and figured out what works and doesn't work is a starting point. So do a little bit more of what works and a little bit less of what's avant-garde and sounds really fun to do in concept, but doesn't really drive Utah growth.
Sure, you know, sure. So. Well, Scott, congratulations on what you're doing here. Hopefully it'll remain open, unlike Revel, which had a lot of unfortunate things that you had no control over. But it sounds like you really got a handle around what you're doing here. And certainly, I think from seeing, you know, the interest in the property, it's going to be a success in no time.
Yeah, we're very excited, and we're gonna make it work real quickly.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast. If you want to read more about this issue or any issue in the gaming industry, read our magazine, GGB Magazine, or visit ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the gaming industry, subscribe to GGB News. For more information, visit ggbnews.com. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.